Before we begin, the Differently Brained team acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we record, edit, and stream this podcast. We pay our respects to all First Nations peoples and their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to all First Nations cultures and their ongoing connection to the lands, waterways, and communities. Now on with the show. Hello and welcome to one more episode of Differently Brains, the podcast where no brain is the same. My name is Lachlan Rutherford.
And I'm Jacinta Dietrich. And we are here with a wonderful, beautiful, lovely, bubbly guest. Today with us we have Nicole Haddo. Nicole is a journalist and author of, get ready for this, so many books, Couple Goals, Building a Strong Financial Future and an Even Better Relationship, The Ethical Investor, and Smashed Avocado, How I Cracked the Property Market and You Can Too. She has written for The Age, Sydney Morning Herald, The Guardian, Australian Financial Review, Domain, Madison, Clio, and more. She lives in regional Victoria with her husband and is working on several projects while renovating their heritage home together. Oh my God, amazing. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you so much, Lachlan and Jacinta. It's great to be with you.
First of all, this isn't a planned question or anything. I just got so excited. How's the renovations going?
The renovations are going well. The house is in a lot better place than it was a couple of years ago. We've been working through the process in stages as we've been able to afford it, but we've got to the point where we can live, which is nice. There are projects that are on hold as the cost of living rises, but there's no rush. We will finish one day. I don't know when, but one day.
I love that. It was such a fun little thing to read in your bio when it came through. I was like, ooh, a heritage home. I love that.
Yeah, heritage homes are great, but they also have a lot of problems sometimes.
Yeah.
Just to kind of veer back into the topic of this podcast. No, it's all good. How would you say money affects or impacts your own mental health and general well-being, considering this is your area of expertise is investing and saving? How does it affect you? But also, do you think that it's a common issue for a lot of people?
I do think it's a common issue for a lot of people. And in fact, it's the reason that I started exploring the subject in more detail. My financial story sort of begins in my late 20s, where I'd unfortunately got myself into a little bit of credit card debt. Mm-hmm. You know, approaching the age of 30 with credit card debt, not a lot of savings, caused me an incredible amount of stress and anxiety. And it was very clear to me that if I could get myself into a stable, comfortable position, I could potentially alleviate a lot of that stress and anxiety. That's not to say that it would go completely, but I could see the correlation between feeling secure and being a little bit clearer mentally.
Right. I've spoken a little bit about this on the podcast before, but when I was just finishing my honors degree, I got it was misinformed. Like, I think it was a robo debt or something, but I got a Centrelink debt on the exact day that I handed in my honours degree. And after all of the work that I put into that, the various stages of mental health and all that kind of stuff, once I got the news that I had this debt, it kind of just crushed me both physically and mentally to the point where I went off the deep end a little bit. So I can not only I can relate to the idea of debt being this sort of all-encompassing, potentially insurmountable thing, and then that just kind of like eviscerates your mental health. I totally get that.
Absolutely. I'm really sorry to hear that, Lachlan.
Oh, and it's fine now. It's good now.
but I think the thing to point out there is you never know what life's going to throw at you. And you know, you touched there on the fact that we're renovating our heritage home, which sounds lovely, and it is lovely, but it doesn't mean that we don't still continue to face challenges. I thought the holy grail for me would be buying a house and then everything would be great. Mm. You get new challenges. You get interest rate rises. Mm. You know, you get challenges where maybe one person's not working for a period of time. And so it's kind of about building the resilience to deal with those challenges as they come along, knowing that inevitably they will.
So we've touched on it a little bit, I think, and you have mostly answered it in terms of finance obviously impacts our mental health and general well-being. Being in this space, have you noticed that the cost of living crisis is making that significantly harder for a lot of people? Have you noticed the increased stress and anxiety from people who you're coming across or interviewing or chatting with?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's affecting me. I get stressed when I go to the supermarket. You know, yeah. I just want to buy groceries for dinner and I'm standing in the aisles and I'm sort of chewing on my fingernails and trying to work out which cheese we should buy. It's like we're still very fortunate. We're, you know, not doing it as tough as many people. And yeah, I think we're not talking about this enough. The combination of inflation, interest rate rises, the simple cost of groceries is making day-to-day life very challenging for many people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think for a lot of our community, things like grocery shopping, going to the chemist, those kinds of experiences, adventures, whatever, trips, I guess is the word, are already generally hard enough that when I have to go in and make like a bunch of new micro decisions based on, oh, well, this price has changed and, you know, things don't align with my budget anymore, it makes an already personally stressful experience just so much harder because same thing as you. I'm trying to figure out, oh, okay, this is on special, but what's the best thing? And, oh, okay, this isn't in stock anymore, so I need to find a substitute for that. Yeah, it's just so difficult, you know, with everything increasing in price because it's obviously not just our groceries. Like you said, it's our mortgage. For a lot of our community, it's our medications. If you can get them, mine's still in a shortage. It just impacts every part of your life. I think money really, it seeps in everywhere because you need it for everything that you do.
You certainly do. And I think there are flow-on effects. So I know that my husband and I, you know, we're not going out as much as we normally would just to make sure that we're keeping our finances in check. That means less socialization. It means less, potentially less enjoyable activities. And so it's about finding activities that bring you joy, that don't cost a lot of money, and making sure that you're still connecting with your community in a way that doesn't hit you financially. There are so many aspects of making sure that you are looking after your mental health through those avenues, through community, and not completely closing yourself off if you can avoid it.
Yeah. How do you personally look after your mental health, if you don't mind talking about it, given the situation of the cost of living, the fact that you're renovating, and not just now, like before with the credit card debt? Are there any particular things that you did or continue to do that help with the anxiety?
Absolutely. So I think a big challenge for me has been making sure that I handle bouts of anxiety in healthy ways, which I don't always do. I love a glass of wine, and I know that a glass of wine is sometimes nice at the time and not so beneficial in the long term. I try to walk a lot, just simply getting outside and walking. I often say to Sam, my husband, I got up one morning last week and I just, my headspace wasn't great. And I said to him, I need to go for a walk. And I was gone for about an hour and I came back feeling much better. But on a practical financial level, I know that ignoring my financial challenges actually makes things worse. So right. Sitting down and doing the administration and looking at income and looking at what's likely to go out in the next couple of months and staying across everything that needs to be done rather than ignoring it is actually beneficial.
That's interesting.
Do you have a like budget to keep across all those things in terms of, do you write it all down or have an app or something to monitor it? Or do you guys do like a finance date night thing where you sit down and chat things through?
Prior to meeting Sam, I was definitely writing things down, looking at expenses, making sure I had the funds to do what I thought that I would want to do. We have since getting together actually gone and got professional financial advice. And the advice there was to actually look at our shared income and do a shared cash flow and look at all of the expenses that come in and all of the expenses that go out and understand what surplus income there is, if any. And then what we did was we automated a lot of our expenses and that actually takes away a lot of the mental load. That the actual physical act of getting a phone bill, paying the phone bill, you know, or putting it off because I'll do it later, that actually adds up. So automating a lot of our expenses has been hugely beneficial. And we're sitting down regularly. Often it coincides with an interest rate rise that will trigger a conversation about money. But the two main things there are knowing if you're in a relationship, what you bring in as a team and how you're going to pay for shared expenses together. And also having regular conversations about what needs to change if things, you know, aren't adding up.
I love that. That's really lovely. Me and my partner have started to try and make it like a fun date night thing. So we will sit down and have a glass of wine and kind of make like a dinner date out of a financial chat once a month, because neither of us really love it. We've both got very different money backgrounds and I'm not working at the moment, so things are a little tight. So it's not necessarily the most fun activity to do, but we've tried to make it a little more exciting and a little more appealing for each of us to, you know, have those conversations.
Yeah, look, it's not always fun. And on that, I'd say a way that you can make it fun is, rather than just spending those date nights doing the administration, it's also an opportunity to talk about what you're looking forward to together and what some of your long-term goals are and getting excited about what those things look like. You know, it might be, okay, we really want to have a beautiful weekend away in 6 months' time. How are we going to make sure that we've allowed for that in our finances? Or, you know, if it's a bigger goal, if it's paying down some debt or saving for a significant asset or investing, these things can be really exciting. So it's about finding the common ground of things that excite you that can make these conversations more enjoyable than they would otherwise be.
And I just want to go back to a previous thing that you said. For someone who isn't in a couple situation and has anxiety about even thinking about money, not me, definitely not me. As you said, it's far better to actually just get in and not ignore the issue and get it done and out of the way. What if you have problems with even doing that, like even just not ignoring the issue? The anxiety is just too much, like, to even engage with the thoughts. Do you have any advice for that?
That's a really good question. I can't provide specific advice about really struggling not to ignore it. But I will say that as someone who has ignored financial burdens in the past, the longer you ignore them, the bigger the challenge becomes and the more your anxiety grows.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I would say, though, is take it in bite-sized chunks. If it's, say, a debt situation that is causing you anxiety, you know that you're probably not going to be able to magically pay off that sum tomorrow. So it's about sitting down and looking at your income and looking at your expenses and looking at where you can find extra cash to slowly chip away at it. Mm-hmm. Trying to solve the problem instantly is unlikely to work, but going easy on yourself, being kind to yourself and slowly addressing the issue over time will hopefully make a difference.
Great. I will tell the person who is not me this advice.
I hope you do tell that person.
So all of your books stem from your own personal financial experiences, which I really, really like, because one of my favorite things when trying to get my finances in order or change something is kind of following along someone who's already done it, who maybe doesn't use all of the jargon, or even if you do, you explain it really gently and clearly, and it's so nice. It's not finance bro nonsense. For people who haven't read your books, did your property journey and your ethical investment journey with your finances improve your mental health long term because you felt you were in a better position or you were supporting causes that you actually cared about?
Look, it's taken a long time and it's not linear. So yes, when I bought my first apartment, which I wrote about in Smashed Avocado, I was so full of joy when I reached that goal. But then I faced new challenges in terms of, you know, managing a mortgage for the first time and paying council rates and things like that. Likewise, moving my super and really engaging with my superannuation really excited me and gave me a sense that I was heading in the right direction. So yes, absolutely. But as I say, it's not linear. And for me, it's been more about learning to put the buffers in place, you know, making sure that there are savings that help us through difficult times, not being impulsive with my spending and then regretting it later. There are still behavioral things that that I have definitely had to work on throughout that period of time. But the biggest thing for me is being aware of my behavior and why I'm doing things and thinking before I spontaneously make a big financial decision.
Are there any methods in particular that you use to curb that impulsivity. I know that's definitely something, again, that comes up in our community a lot, especially for our ADHDers, that impulsive purchases to get that dopamine hit is a big one. Are you one of the wait 24 hours between yourself and a purchase or a specific savings kind of gal?
I'm rarely a wait 24 hours person.
And I respect that.
It's actually my most effective approach has actually coincided with merging much of my finances with my husband. Mm-hmm. We now have considerable shared expenses in the form of the mortgage, the house, all that comes with that.
Yeah.
So we have reached a position where after all of our shared expenses, we both allocate ourselves a slice of income each week. And that's my income. That's my personal spending amount. Mm-hmm. So if I don't have the money, I can't buy it. It's really straightforward. It means planning. It means saying, okay, I've got this week's amount, but next week I've got a big expense because, you know, I've got to go and get new contact lenses or I've got to go to the doctor or whatever that is. So just being mindful that I can't go and blow all of that amount each week. I have to keep putting a little bit aside so that when I do have a personal expense that comes up, that doesn't affect our shared finances.
That's just so wholesome.
It's wholesome until I want to go and buy something I really want.
Fair enough. We're going to go to a super quick break. And on the other side, we'll have plenty more questions for Nicole all about money and relationships.
Here at Differently Brained, we're huge advocates for our local book industry. We love our Aussie authors, our Aussie publishers, and our Aussie booksellers. And though we do favour the in-store experience of a local indie, we know that this isn't always the most accessible way to get your book fix. So, we've partnered up with Booktopia, only the biggest online book retailer in the country, to make sure that when you can't get to the books will come to you. With all the latest releases and old favourites, Booktopia has everything you're looking for. And, best of all, they stock all the books by our wonderful podcast guests. And they even stock Jacinta's little novella as well. So, you know, good to know. By purchasing through our link, not only do you support a local author, but you're also helping us at this little podcast out as well. So, next time you're on the hunt for your next read, maybe head to the link in our show notes and go and get yourself a treat or two or 10 or 90. Welcome back from our brief little break. Today we are talking to Nicole Haddow about money and all of her wonderful books and publications. And specifically, we want to talk right now a little bit about her book, Couple Goals. Now, what was the impetus for writing it?
So I moved to regional Victoria in 2021. My dream was always to purchase a freestanding home. I mentioned earlier that my first property was an apartment. I needed to sell that during the pandemic. That was really stressful. But I was fortunate that I was able to take the income from that initial sale and purchase a freestanding home. I knew I wasn't going to be able to buy a house on a single income in Melbourne, where I grew up. And so there was this huge leap of faith moving to a country town by myself. And the first year was really challenging. But a year in, I met a nice guy called Sam, and he moved in quite quickly. And that presented some challenges in the respect that, you know, I'd purchased the home, he was moving in. How did we split costs? Did I continue to cover the mortgage? How do couples manage money? And so I decided to do some investigating into what the experts recommend and what the best practice approaches are and document the journey.
Again, right. I love that you took a personal experience that you were like, we don't know what we're doing, and put it into a book for the rest of us, because it just makes it so accessible. And just the way you write, it's fun. It's like, oh yeah, other people do this. It's okay. You know, Nicole's done it, and you know, her and Sam are all good. They're renovating their heritage house. Everything's fine. It just, it's nice to feel like you're genuinely a real person on the other side, which sometimes finance books don't feel like that at all.
And the other thing I thought was really good as well were at the end of each chapter, the talking points that you bring up with your partner. Like that was, I don't have a partner at the moment, but like I could imagine that those would be talking points that are easy to broach and easy to talk through. I appreciate them.
Absolutely. Well, there's, I guess, two things to say there. Thank you. I'm glad that you appreciate the first person perspective. I don't want to read finance textbooks either. and we know that money brings up a lot of emotions and a lot of challenges. And I think ensuring that the emotion and the human experience is in there is really useful for readers. And then in terms of the talking points, Lachlan, they're there because good communication is actually the foundation of, you know, working on your finances together, which is why I added those questions at the end of each chapter. And you will have noticed that they start quite simple. They're not really intense from the get-go. Yeah. The idea is that you work up to the difficult conversations, but you have to start talking and making sure you're having those chats about where you're going together.
So, like, obviously communication is great for managing finance, but also, you know, being in a relationship in general, inevitably, like, conflict arises as a result. How does conflict over money impact relationships?
Look, conflict can be hugely challenging, but I think the important thing to understand is that conflict is normal. You are two individuals and you are going to be coming at various matters from different perspectives. What's important is to accept that from time to time there will be conflict and working on the tools that you need to make sure that that conflict is managed in a way that you can repair quickly, because it's actually better to have difficult conversations, even if they occasionally get, you know, a little bit uncomfortable, than not having those conversations and making assumptions or getting into a place where you're experiencing resentment or you get to a point where you're not communicating at all.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I did a bit of research before this episode and I don't remember the stats. I should have written them down. But I was looking at a psychologist who was talking about the majority of the divorces. They were a couples counselor. The majority of the divorces they've seen, it was couples who weren't doing the fighting, especially before they came in and weren't, you know, having those conversations in their sessions, whereas the ones who did maybe get a bit fiery and a bit spicier were generally able to work through because they already had a form of communication, even if it maybe wasn't the healthiest form of communication, but because they had already broached the fact that there was conflict in their relationship and they were having those conversations already, that they were more likely to be able to ride it out and stay together and learn the healthy communication rather than the couples who were just completely avoiding that conflict entirely. I thought that was really interesting and it made a lot of sense.
I think it does. I think if there's any upside of having a disagreement, it shows that you care. You know, if you're not fighting, maybe there's some care about your future missing. Fighting over something, fighting over equality, fighting over doing things differently because you want a better outcome means that you actually do care.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that.
You touched on it before, but if you're comfortable digging into it a little bit more, I would love to know, how did you guys get to a point where you decided shared finances and you worked all of that out? And were there any big hiccups or big compromises that you and Sam had to do?
Look, it wasn't something that we did straight away in terms of the significant shared finances. Initially, we just set up a shared grocery account and we were contributing to that each week. And, you know, we were putting a little bit away each week for, you know, a holiday down the track. Initially, most of our finances were separate. We went and sought financial advice. And so we went through the financial advice process. We still have our own bank accounts. We still have our own slice of spending each week. But because of where we are in terms of our financial position, largely that's having a mortgage, it made sense for us to be managing most of our costs together. So yes, we do still have our own personal bank accounts, and having your own autonomy when you're in a relationship is still great and really quite important. But yes, we weren't sure what to do. So we went and saw a financial advisor. And I know that not everyone can afford to do that or can access that, which is why I documented that process, so that people who perhaps don't have access to it understand what's involved.
Was that a scary process? Because I haven't been to a financial advisor. And just before I got made redundant last year, we were looking at potentially it was almost time for me and my partner to go and do that. And I just had way too much anxiety around it because I didn't know what to expect. Your book has been very helpful. For our listeners, was that something that caused you anxiety, potentially going in and, you know, sharing that information with a stranger and sharing your relationship?
Oh, absolutely. Like it wasn't relaxing, and it takes a while to build a relationship with a financial advisor and to have that rapport and to know that, oh, this person really does have our best interests at heart. So making the right choice on that front is really important. What probably surprised me is that in some respects it felt like couples counseling, because our financial advisor, Rebecca, was asking both of us questions about, you know, where we wanted to go in our individual lives and together. So it wasn't just about the numbers and cents. There was a lot of conversations about what does our future look like? You know, having to itemize our spending so that we could understand where our discretionary spending was going, that was really confronting, because I'd never shared finances with another person until I met Sam. So I was used to spending my money as I pleased. There's a lot of vulnerability involved, and it does take time to get used to it. But the benefit for both of us and our relationship has just been remarkable.
Great.
That's very reassuring. When, you know, we're back in the position where maybe we go talk to someone, I will keep that in mind and come back to this episode and listen to it, because, yeah, it just seems so intense and very similar to you. I had never shared finances until the relationship I'm in now. And just like even when we did our shared account and stuff, or when we did our mortgage application, because we did that together, sharing like, hey, this is how much I spend on these things. Like even though Lucas has never judged me about anything ever except for my coffee order, it was really scary being like, this is my money habits, thoughts. Oh, and Sirius has opinions as well.
It is confronting to share that information with a partner, because, it does feel very personal.
Yeah.
And it also brings up potentially some habits that you have to address.
Yeah.
You know, I had to look at my personal spending and go, oh, actually, this can be reined in.
Yeah.
How early is too early to start talking about money in a relationship? Is it something that now, if you had your time again, kind of thing, you would bring up kind of first date style? Or do you think it's something that you do wait a little bit for? Because I know that it is, you know, such a confusing and big, weird thing.
I definitely don't think you ask your date for their bank account balance, you know, halfway through dinner on the first date. you can give it a little bit longer. You might actually find that money things come up sooner than you expect them to, quite naturally, because you'll start to have conversations around, you know, whether you need to pay for accommodation if you're going to a wedding together, or whether you're splitting the bill on dinner, or these things actually really start to come up naturally. And not shying away from really simple conversations about money is a really good start. Again, things will progress, you know, if you are dating and working out who pays for what, that's a stage. Then when you move in together, that's when it really starts to get, you know, a little bit more significant, because you've got shared bills and you have to work out what's an appropriate split of costs in your circumstances. And then again, if you get to a point where you're established and you know, you're wanting to have a family or really plan a long-term future, the conversations get more complex again. But I think in the early days, it's really about gently establishing what your financial compatibility levels are like and having open conversations about money generally, so that it doesn't come as a shock when you start to have big conversations down the track.
Yeah, really using those early ones as kind of a gateway building
setup. Absolutely.
I like that. I guess if you've got that foundation early on and, you know, you lean into those early conversations, it's obviously going to make it easier when the big scary ones come up.
For sure, for sure.
What was it like writing about your relationship and money and your personal experiences across any of the books, really. Does that feel vulnerable? And how did you feel sharing so much of yourself, even though, you know, you go and do research and talk to other professionals? It's still probably very scary putting yourself out there so much. Did you have anxiety around publishing things?
it's so funny that you asked that, because I was just saying to Sam recently, like, the writing process takes a really long time, and I love writing, and I get in this incredible zone where I forget there's a world outside my study, and I forget that it's actually going to be in print and other people are going to read it. So, probably the week before it came out, I felt a significant amount of anxiety. Mm-hmm. This one in particular, because it doesn't just affect me, it affects Sam too.
Yeah.
The reason that I wanted to write about couples and money was because I believed many people could benefit from this, but I was incredibly mindful of the fact that this wasn't just my story. So this one, of all the ones that I've written, has probably been the most anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
Because, as I say, it affects Sam too, but he's been absolutely wonderful. And yeah, just like talking about money, I've talked him through this entire process. I've made sure he's comfortable with what I'm doing and what I'm saying, and he understands why I'm doing it, and he understands that it's, you know, hopefully going to help other people like us who didn't know how to manage their finances.
That's so lovely. It must be, yeah, definitely a little bit anxiety for him as well, because, yeah, like you said, it's not just your story. He's out there now, and, you know, I don't know if Sam has a public profile, but, you know, that's scary, just that there's strangers like Lachlan and I that now know Sam exists and about his business, relationship and stuff. Yeah, I can definitely see how you both would have had to have worked through that together.
we absolutely did. And I think he doesn't have a public profile, and he's not big on social media, but I think he's enjoying the process, and, you know, seeing how it all plays out has been exciting for him. But yeah, I've asked a lot of him, and I'm really grateful that he's supported me in this.
Finally, this is a very, very broad question, and I apologize for that, but you've already given tips to, and I won't be coy about it, it was not a friend, it was me that I was asking advice for. Yeah, who'd have thought?
Wow, I had no idea.
Considering who most of our listeners are, people with mental health issues and neurodivergent, that kind of thing, people like that, people like us, tend to have a reluctance to talk about or think about money, have all sorts of spending issues. I personally get very anxious when I think about it. I don't understand any of it, and it kind of freaks me out, the prospect of potentially one day entering into a relationship with someone who I'm not necessarily financially compatible with, and whether that's even a possibility for me, kind of thing. And this is where the broadness of the question comes in. What are the biggest tips that you've got for our listeners and also me in general?
Look, Lachlan, it's something that affects everyone, the idea of discussing money with a partner or discussing money in general. I completely understand that it can feel incredibly overwhelming. It's really difficult for me to answer this question for you. The best thing that I can say to you is to go and see a professional if you can, if you get to the stage that you're in a relationship and you're making some big financial decisions together. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have to be a financial advisor. It could be an accountant. It could be a tax agent. Anyone who can help you set up systems that work for you, that take the pressure off, that take off the mental load, that reduce the anxiety, are going to help you in the long run. I appreciate how difficult it is to address, especially if you have gone through long periods of your life not addressing your finances, but I can't tell you how much better it feels to bite the bullet and deal with these challenges.
Great. Thank you for that answer.
Thank you so much, Nicole, for coming on today. We both learned so much. You've obviously given Lachlan some amazing advice that definitely wasn't for him. We really, really appreciate you taking the time to come and, you know, talk us through all of your books and everything.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed the conversation, and I really love the work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If anyone wants to buy Nicole's fabulous books, you can find the links to those in the show notes. We'll also share some of her articles and bits and pieces if you want to know more about her. If you want to come and hang out with us, please do. We're on Instagram. You can join our private Facebook group, which is absolutely delightful. And we chat all things mental health and neurodivergence with no judgment. Otherwise, we'll see you next week, guys.
Thanks, y'all. Bye.
Differently Brain shares the opinions of individuals and does not consider your personal circumstances. Differently Brain exists purely for information purposes and should not be relied on as health or medical advice. Because no brain is the same, please consult your healthcare professional for your personal medical needs.